This audio tape is copyrighted by Uplook Ministries to maintain the integrity of the material. Permission is granted to make copies of this tape in its entirety as long as this message is included. Additional resources may be obtained from Uplook Ministries by calling 1-800-952-2382.
In Matthew chapter 11, one of the problems with reaching the poor is not that they're not there. There's plenty of poor folks out there. One of the problems in reaching the poor is our problem. And one of our problems is found in Matthew chapter 11, 6. Isn't it interesting that he says to the poor, the gospel is preached. And then for some strange reason, he says, blessed is he whosoever is not offended in me. I wonder if the problem in reaching the poor is that we're just too wrapped up in ourselves. We're too concerned about our offenses and our personal place. I think that we become impotent in our ministry because we have somehow got a bigger view of ourselves than we do of the needs of the poor and the needy in the world. And we take up offense. I wonder how many churches are being rendered impotent and ineffective because the leaders in that church and the folks in the church have got personal offenses one against another. The poor of the gospel is preached, and blessed is he who is not offended in me. Now in James chapter 1, we find another definition of the poor. Maybe we'll define them a little bit before we talk about how to reach them. Now I didn't sit around and try to dream up new ways to reach the poor. I'm not very good at that. I just largely have to do what I'm doing. And I find that in my mind, the gulf that I mentioned earlier is really clear. When I hear another brother expound the Word of God and realize, he really knows the book. And I think, I have a tendency to think, I don't know it like he does, and I don't think I ever could, so why try? That's not my approach to things, but that's the gulf, the bridge that I need to get. So what I realize then is I come back to where I'm at, and I say, that's the direction I want to take. I want to understand the Word of God. When I think of the poor, I think of how enormous the project is. I heard a presentation on Samaritan's Purse. Have you heard about that? It's a tremendous work. Franklin Graham. What they do is a very simple thing. They pack shoeboxes. You know, you go into your closet, you've all got them. They pack them with toys. It's largely for children. They put toys in and toothbrushes and soap and things that kids of the third world don't have. And they wrap these up. And they take them to the third world. But I have the same problem when I think of that. You know, when I think of, I mean, I'm not criticizing that. Don't misunderstand. But when I think of another man's vision, I get cumbered. What God has given another man to do and what God has accomplished through another man, if that's my view, if that's what I fill my mind with, I become cumbered. And I think, boy, I could never do that, or I haven't done that, or where am I? So what I'm saying is that I continually have to refocus. God has put me where he's put me, and God has given me a ministry, and I need to carry that out and not be cumbered or tripped up by another man's abilities or another man's accomplishment. The Samaritan's Purse, when I think of just getting a shoebox, I think, boy, it'd take me a whole day to do that, and I don't have a day to do that. But they don't just do a shoebox. They get, the first year, I think they did 30,000. I think it's gone to 300,000. And they ship them all to a place on the coast. They put them on pallets, and they wrap them in plastic, and they put them on ships, and they ship them overseas, and then they have people meet them there, and these people then take these and distribute them to needy children. And I thought, when I heard that, I thought, I'd love to do that. You know, I would feel like I was doing something if I had something under my arm, a shoebox full of things, and I saw that bright and shiny face. I would love to do that. But I have a problem, not with that, but with my mind. My mind says, I've got four shoeboxes and there's five kids here. I go, oh boy, what am I going to do with that? And then I've got 30,000 shoeboxes and there's 500,000 kids in the city. And even when we get to 300,000, the need is 30 million. But why is it that I get tripped up there? It's because I'm embracing another man's vision. I'll wager you that Franklin Graham is not cumbered by the vision. I think he is lubricated by it. and he's encouraged by it, and he's energized by it. So what I have to do then, unless I'm going to go do that, I need to get back to where I'm at, and I need to live out the Christian life, and I need to do it in a way that Dr. Gooding has expressed, to the fullness of God's blessing and ability that he's given me. Now, who are the poor? The poor are those that need the gospel, the Lord Jesus said, and when we see the poor in the gospels, why were they poor? We have a lot of folks today in our society that are equally as poor, and maybe the reasoning is the same. Our little chapel's on a highway, and we get an awful... I live next door, and I also work next door. I have a little upholstery business that supports my... I like to say it supports my habit of my desire to serve the Lord. But so when folks come there, wandering in there, wanting money, they always wind up in my presence somehow. And if the ones that we've evaluated that we've tried to give money to are the ones we've helped, and we've done a lot, I honestly can't think of one that we've been able to follow up on that we were wise to help. Isn't that crazy? It's really strange. I don't know how important it is we evaluate whether they're worthy of our help or not. Hopefully, some of those will turn to Christ because we did help them. All of the stories are not success stories. Some of them even embarrass me when I think about it. I had a fella come to the chapel one day, and he got over to my place, and he was a biker-looking guy, pretty hard-looking guy. And I had this, it's like somebody said yesterday, I was in a visit, and just struggle with the flesh all the time. You know, I thought, this guy's harder than nails, and I don't want to, I kind of need to meet him on his ground. So we sat down, and his problem was like a lot of other folks' problem, and he said, I need to get to California because my mother's sick in the hospital, and or something to that effect. And so when I sat down with him, I said, that's not my problem. Why are you making it my problem? I don't know why I said that. It's not a pattern for what I would do in the future, but he got his biker attitude on and really gave it to me. And he left angry. Now, one of the things we've learned in dealing with the poor is we tell them no if they come to us. We tell them no, 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 until they finally believe we mean no. And then when they leave, if they're angry, we know we did the right thing. But if they leave with a contrite and understanding spirit, we say, just a minute, maybe we should talk a little further. An awful lot of con going on out there in the poor world, people that are just there, and really what you do is you lend yourself to their foolishness, and you bring yourself down to a place of their level when you just minister to them. See, it's an easy thing. Somebody comes asking, or you meet a poor person, it's an easy thing to give him $10 or $20. Really difficult to take him on and to work through his problems. Now, one of the ways the poor is identified in the Gospels, in the Scripture, is in James. Verse 27, it says, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep them, to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now, here we are identifying the poor, but remember in Matthew chapter 11, to the poor the gospel is preached, and blessed is he who is not offended in me. I think that my friend Jim Wright, a longtime worker in the Colorado area, always says to me, what God is doing in you is more important than what God is doing through you. Now, if we could go back in James, we won't. If we could go back in James here, we'd find, we're not going to go into detail. If any man, verse 23, if any man be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's likened to a man holding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself and go away and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. If we're going to reach the poor and needy, and here they're identified in two ways. I like to change this. I don't know if it's really legitimate or not, but I like to change this to single mothers when I think of widows. I think of the enormous, probably the greatest immorality and destruction of our nation today is the propagation of children without fathers. It's probably going to be the very thing that destroys the fabric of our nation. And here they are, mothers out there, and it's unrighteously so, with children, and some of them are getting saved, and these fatherless children need a father. So there's the poor. Okay, it's a difficult arena to work in. And if you're a man, if you want to be a father to those children, there are a lot of complications that come into that. Well, I don't mean a father to them, but you can take them and do something with them. One of the things I do is fish. And from time to time, I get some of these kids, and I take them fishing and teach them a little bit about it and try to give them a male role model. Now, the women that are in this situation, the widows, you ladies need to be working with them. And I'll tell you, there's a real danger, and let me say it this way. There's a danger that the ladies will not take up working with the widows and the single mothers. And if the men in the assembly try to be a father to those children, you can see, or try to help those children, you can see if you ladies are not ministering to those single mothers, you can see the potential that problem could come. We don't want relationships being built through with men in the assembly and single mothers. As I thought on this morning to review or to recap or to redirect, I thought of three things. I thought we need a passion for the poor, we need principles in reaching the poor, and then as I was reminded yesterday, we need some methods. When I think of passion for the poor, if it doesn't have the attraction and the admiration, the adoration of Christ, in its motivation, I don't know what good it is. I have a grandson who's 5 years old now, and he and I are really tight. He's the finest little guy, at least for Grandpa. He tried his parents, but for Grandpa, he's a fine little guy. When he was about 6 months old, and for a couple of years before that, I had been through some real trying times in relating to ministry in the Lord's work. And I'll tell you, you know, out there in the, as you folks know, out there in the real world where we're working out these principles that we're learning at the conference, the battles rage. But at any rate, I can't say that I was discouraged, but I certainly was on the downside. And this little guy, right almost from birth, I'd say 3 or 4 months, he somehow gained an attraction for me. I mean, he thought Grandpa was great. When he was about 6 months old, any time I would come in the room, if somebody was holding him, he would reach out to me. And if he just knew how cute he was, you know, he's just irresistible. But then if he was on the floor and I would come into the room, and he would, as soon as he would see me, he might be across the room there, he'd start crawling. It takes a long time, you know, when he's just learning to crawl. And then he got to the place where he'd get a hold of a pant leg, and he'd start working his way up until he could stand up. And then when he got his balance, he'd reach up like this. Well, I was kind of enjoying it. And I would stand there like this, and I'd watch him crawl across, and I'd fold my arms, and I'd watch him. And then as long as I could force myself to stand it, while he was reaching up like this, I would stand there and look at him. And I'll tell you, I was revived. You know, you sometimes get to a place in life where you think, you know, maybe the gulfs are too great for me to span or for me to go on. And I realized in that worship and adoration are indispensably valuable. Now, what I would encourage you to do when you're in your consideration to reach the poor is on your knees. I don't know what you want to do for the poor, but put that off for a minute. On your knees, reach up to the Lord Jesus Christ and adore him. Now, I think I can tell you what the result is going to be. There is absolutely nothing I would not do for that child. I mean, I tell you, my heart is so big toward him. I'd be with him right now instead of this conference if that was possible. We need a passion for God. Now, with that, and I'll just assume, I wonder when I see that sign out there, I wonder when I saw the topic, I wondered a lot of things. I thought, why did they assign me that topic? Well, I wondered. But then I wondered, if I were at a conference and there's a whole row of topics of folks to go to, or seminars to go to, would I choose that topic? And I had to tell you, folks, I wouldn't have chosen it. I wouldn't be in this room where you are. So following that through, as I said, bridging the gap, I thought, what kind of people are going to come to the seminar? And I realized that they're going to be really, really, really special people. People with a passion for God and for his people. They're going to be the kind of people that send birthday cards. I'll bet you ladies think about birthdays. Now, I could care less about birth. I don't even care about mine, especially now. I hit my 52nd last year and hit my 53rd, and I don't really need another one. And cards to me are a waste of money and time. But I have to admit, I mean, I take the veil off here, and I have to admit I really appreciate getting them, not because I care about a card, but because it's in a realm outside of where I'm at. It's a realm where somebody is big enough to care and reach into another person's life. And I don't quite understand that. I mean, I'm not big enough to do that. But I'm big enough to appreciate someone that cares about reaching out to someone else. And I love that attribute. And I thought, that's the kind of people that will be at the seminar. I have four sons and a daughter. And I'll tell you, I would have rather taken a class this weekend on parenting and grandparenting. I think I have some things to say about that. But when I think of the thought of this morning and redirected last night, I thought of passion, principles, and methods. Probably not going to get to them. We'll just get to passion. Let me tell you a little more about passion. My fourth son, Joel, is 23 years old, I think, 24 maybe. He just got married last summer, married a fine lady. And all five of our children, by the way, I love to tell this because I know that people make things out of it they ought not. They'll think I'm wonderful when I tell this, so that's why I tell. All five of our children are in varying degrees of fellowship at Clifton Bible Temple, where we are in Grand Junction. And you just go ahead and make wonderful things out of that. We've been involved with the battles with our kids, so we know the truth. I was praising somebody's child one day, and a couple, and a fine kid. And I saw the mother was just, you know, she wasn't beaming like I would expect her to do. And so I gave her a chance to talk, and she said, well, you know, we know the whole story. So what you do when you go to a conference, at least if you're from Colorado, you just tell part of the story, and folks just assume the best. But we love our kids. My son, Joel, he's a neat guy. I'd love to tell you about him, but he's a river rat. He loves to raft, and he's very good at it. And I've never taken time for a lot of recreation. I fish, but not near as much as I'd like to. But I love to be with my boys. So anything they do, I take up. And so a year ago last summer, I went rafting on the Gunnison River with my sons, and it's just 30 or 50 miles or so from where we live. Wonderful. We live in the most wonderful place in the world, with the exception of where you folks live. But as my son-in-law was there, and my son and two other young men were with us, and my son-in-law cast across the stream, and his spinner got caught on the other side of the gunnison. Well, I don't have a lot of experience in rafting and river-type stuff, even though I've been in foolish situations. By the way, let me save your life. If you ever get in a river, never, never, never get above your knees unless you've got a life jacket on. Now, the reason is that when you fall, if you're up here, when you fall, you know how you fall? When you fall, you catch yourself with your hands. When you fall and you catch yourself with your hands in a river, if you're above your knees, you have no air. And you can't get up. That's what happened to me. I started across the river. We stopped about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I had taken my life jacket off, which I'll never do again, and I started across this river to help my son-in-law to get it. And when the water got up about here, I lost the first time I've ever been washed off my feet in a river. I haven't been in a river a lot. But when I hit the bottom of that river, I had not like you jump in a pool. You take a deep breath and you jump in and you work your way back up the top. I had no deep breath. And I was under the water, and the water was pushing me down about 20 or 30 feet. There were these big, huge gulfs in the canyon, and these walls that rise maybe 150 feet of sheer rock pushed me into this turbulence, and the river here took a left-hand turn, which made an awful lot of things going on. The water was being very turbulent. Threw me into that rock, in the process of time, and then my son, who saw the trouble, I've told this story several times, and I try not to be emotional about it. The emotions come because my son's involved. When I think of the situation I was in, it was really stupid, and I think I deserve to drown. But when I think of my son's part in this, I get emotional. After I was thrown into that rock, I came up out of the water three times, all the time trying to get air, and I never got any air. But if you've ever drowned before, you know that what you do is you take in water. Every time, I don't know how it was getting in there, but my stomach was filling with water, and I was trying to breathe. I came up three times, and the second time I came up about 20 or 30 yards away, I could see my son. You know, this is not what you folks came to hear, but I want to make a point. Running at me. Well, I was thinking, I thought, I didn't expect to die like this. That was my thought. I thought, boy, stupid way to die. I was drowning. And the third time I came up, right there in my face was my son, Joel. I mean, he was this far away. He had decided when he saw me fall in that he was going in. He said, when he ran past my son-in-law, I said, I'm going in case he needs my help. Well, he didn't know how desperately I was going to need his help. He was right there in my face, and I can remember him saying, he said, you doing okay, buddy? Well, I didn't have any air, and you can't talk if you don't have any air. And my son took me, got a hold of me, wrapped his arm around my back, and put it on my chest. And I was thinking, oh, God, we're going to both drown. There was no way in my mind we're getting out of there. But later, not realizing how proficient he had become in the river, I knew that God had prepared him for that day, kind of like the great fish. But I was thinking of this when I thought, when I was exhorted to use illustrations. What is it we need for the poor? A passion for the poor. We need to see the need. Now, he was on the bank and he saw the need. We need to be there. Sometimes I think we spend time where we ought not. We're too much on rest and relaxation. We need to be willing. Without thought, without getting his own life jacket. I asked him later, what about a life jacket? He said, Dad, I couldn't put it on. He said, if you had gone down and the river had kept you, I couldn't get down to get you with a life jacket on. So I had to go in without a life jacket. I said, promise me you'll never do that again. He said, I can't make that promise, Dad, because I have to go down. If I have to go down, I can't do it without a life jacket. We need to be willing to lay down our lives. We need to be confident. A lot of us maybe would take off to Little Rock next spring with no experience, therefore no confidence. But maybe after Little Rock, we'll have a little experience and a little confidence. Now, that's the case of my son. He'd been there, and he'd worked at it. It meant a lot to him, and I'm not the only one that he's rescued from the river. Being experienced and being willing to lay down our lives. So that's the passion I thought of. Now, principles. Let me see if I can get to that. What would be a great principle in reaching the poor? And then I want to get to methods. The best answer I could come up with is the passage we read in Matthew 27. But first, I thought what we need to do is obey God.
Now, I don't know exactly, well, there's 1,400 people at this conference, and God's probably not calling them all the same way as you, but I think that probably for you and I, me because I was assigned the topic, you because you've chosen this class, God is calling us to uniquely reach out to the poor. So we need to obey that. Now, how do I love the Lord? Well, it says, or how do I obey God? Well, I love Him. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul, and your neighbors, yourself. And how do I love Him? John chapter 14. Let's look there just for a minute. John chapter 14. Let's look at some principles in reaching the poor, and hopefully we'll get to the methods. Methods are, I've said this five times already, methods are not exactly my bag. I believe if you're loving the Lord and you're obeying Him and you're walking with Him, you know, the methods will take care of themselves. But we have some things that work, and I'll pass those on to you if we have time. John 14, 21 through 23, it says, He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. He that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself to him. Judas said unto him, not Iscariot, Lord, how is it that thou wilt manifest thyself unto us and not unto the world? And Jesus answered and said unto him, if any man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him and will come unto him, and we will make our abode with him. Now that being the case, that being the promise, what about the poor? Well, you know, I have this keen conviction that if you have this relationship with God, you're going to have plenty of folks around you to reach out to. So that's the principle. We need to draw nigh unto the Lord, and He'll draw nigh unto us. Another principle is that we need to teach others to do the same. If we have time, you're familiar with the passage in 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 2. There's kind of a fourfold discipleship there going on. Paul teaching Timothy and Timothy teaching others that they may in turn teach others. So we need to teach others to do the same thing. Draw nigh unto the Lord, and He'll draw nigh unto us. And then I'd like to say this, and I had more to say about it, but I want to move on for the sake of getting to some methods. Following the pattern that the Scripture lays out, I think we've really got a tremendous advantage in the assembly. And I was listening to that testimony last night of the fellow in Kansas there, Richard. You know, that's. I think he's right. I think there's a lot of opportunity like that out there now. And when I think of that group of 60 or so that's become an assembly down there in Kansas, is that right? Was it Kansas? Virginia? Sorry about that. Oh, okay, that's right. The Richard was. Let's see. Fellow that led the singing. Okay. At any rate, we've got a group of 60 folks that are on fire about the things of God. I get the impression that there's going to be some poor reached. I think it's going to happen. I think that probably the Lord is pleased by the devotion and the clarity of thinking and the understanding of His Word and the carrying out. And I've got a hunch that a lot of poor folks are going to be reached. By the way, I didn't define them, but you know, the one of the groups of poor that we're so... surrounded by are in Revelation chapter 3. Rich and increased with goods, and knoweth not that thou art wretched, miserable, naked, and poor. Now, there's a lot of folks like that live in our subdivision. And there are folks like that in our assemblies. And that's who God was talking to in Matthew, or in Revelation chapter 3, those in the church. Now, one more thing on principles, and then we'll get to methods. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Now, folks, this is my burden, this is my heart. I'll tell you, over the period of 30-some years, because I was led to the Lord by a fellow that was in an assembly in Colorado Springs, and I started fellowshipping in an assembly, got taught the Word, and I see New Testament church principles. Now, I have a motto in my life. It's threefold, not motto, that's not the right word, but direction, I'll say, in my life I get from Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. It says, Husbands, love your wives. And so I think that's really important. If we're not doing that, I don't know what else. If you're married, you're not doing it. If you're not married, you can pick up the next two. But if you're not, if you're with a spouse or not loving your spouse, then I honestly don't see any future for you in helping the poor or anybody else. So we need to start there. And I think in a generation, by the way, I'm off track for a minute if I was going to do parenting and grandparenting. When you hear the cry today, children first, I don't believe that. I think that the best thing a father can do for his children is to love his wife. I think we did much better when children, so to speak, were to be seen and not heard. But anyway, that's another topic. The second thing in that verse, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Now, Christ loved the church, as we heard today. Magnificent message. But you see, there's a great gulf there because he is God. And if I'm going to love the church, wow. You know, I'm so little and so finite and so unworthy or whatever. I really can't accomplish it like he did the white trot. No. I can do it on a local level. And I'll tell you something. I think that I can do it very effectively. I can love the church and give myself for it. I really believe if you want the greatest principle for reaching the poor, I think that's it. You know, if there's better ideas, we need to have another seminar and need to ask somebody else to teach it because I just have to tell you what I've seen work. Hundreds that have come to Christ. Not just the poor, but I don't know blood. I don't know of any rich person that's ever gotten saved in the works that I've been involved in. Mostly folks that are poor have come to Christ, and it's been profoundly effective. And it wasn't my idea. I sometimes vainly wish I had a good idea, but I haven't come up with a better one than what the Lord has said. When the apostles set out in the book of Acts, they preached the word of God, people got saved, they baptized them, and they gathered them together for fellowship, for apostles' doctrine, for breaking of bread and prayer. And I'll tell you, that's a powerful method for reaching the poor and the needy in North America. Now, let me show you one more principle here in relating to this, and that's 1 Corinthians 11. This is the passage we're all so familiar with. But I want to show you something possibly you haven't seen. In verse 26, for as often as you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you do show the Lord's death till he come. Now that word show is more commonly pronounced or translated in the New Testament preach. You do preach the Lord's death till he come. Now I'll give you an example of that in chapter 9, verse 14. It says, even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. Now that's the word there in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So, it sounds strange, doesn't it? I know it sounds strange. I've been told. That gathering together to remember the Lord in his death in a faithful way has some profound effect in reaching the poor. You've gone mad. It's a good thing this was a small group, so we didn't waste everybody's time. That's not the case, folks. It's not the case. There's something profound, and I don't know what it is. It's like Dr. Gooding said today, where did God live before he created the universe? I said that one time, and a brother, a very faithful brother to me, said to me, he said, I said that God created space before space was, there was no space before God created it. Well, it's kind of a paradox, and this guy laughingly at a conference, and he said, you know, somehow you had God living in a little box where there was no space before he created space. Well, I don't know where God lived before he created space, and I thought Dr. Gooding handled that very well. Where was God before he created the universe? I'm not sure how I got off on that. At any rate, here it is. Here's the thought. I don't know how profoundly remembering the Lord in his death affects the reaching of the poor. I don't know. But here's what it says. As oft as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do show forth the Lord's death. You do preach the Lord's death till it comes. And that's something I'm going to do. I don't know about shoeboxes. I think it's a great idea, but I'm not absolutely sure if that's, I mean, I know that's probably not the way I'll express my reaching to the poor. But I thank God for those that do. But I know this, that as I gather together with the Lord's people on a regular basis and remember him in his death, that I preach his death till he comes. Now, I want to mention this. I want to ask this question. How many of you meet in an assembly where they break bread weekly? Or regularly, probably all of you. Now, don't answer this question to me or to your neighbors or raising your hand. How many of you offer the sacrifice of your lips regularly? Ladies excluded. Now, my wife comes to worship every Sunday morning well prepared. And if she's not prepared with something she wants to offer, she's because of her devotion to the Word of God through the week, she has something and she offers it to the Lord. And I'm confident that it's just as acceptable, if not more so, than that of us who take an audible part. So don't let your silence rob you of worshiping God and have an offering to him there, ladies. It's really, really important. I can tell you what you say in silence in your heart toward God is resoundingly open in heaven. And the angels, as Gabriel and Michael hear, they say, did you hear that that came from that dear lady? There. So, do you offer regularly the fruit of your lips? I realize maybe some growing healthy assemblies, ours is a little like that, may not be an opportunity every week. But do you do it? Now, here's the question I have when we come to principle. If you don't do that, whether you're a man or a woman, what do you care about the poor? I mean, if we haven't learned, and we have an opportunity, and we haven't learned to come before God and worship him, you say, well, I just haven't got, you know, the gift. Well, don't bore me with that. The most profound things that we've ever heard in our assembly come from those who maybe seldom take part, and from those who are the more simple of brothers. And one of them comes to my mind as I make the transition here to Methodist. His name was Loyal Matthews, my best friend for the last 15 years, died on the 3rd of December of lung cancer. Found out on the 3rd of August that he had lung cancer, and 4 months later, the Lord took him home. And when he came, he lived across the street from me. When he came across the street, you know, I get the impression this morning that I'm a weeper, but I'm really not. I don't cry much. Sometimes emotions kind of, you know, they're funny things, aren't they? They sneak up on you. They grab you when you're not expecting them. He came across the street and he told me, he said, Rich, the doctor told me I have a, not just a, you know, not one of these, but one of these in my lungs. You have 4 to 6 weeks to live. I grabbed him and I held him and I cried with him and I said, Lord, I said, Lord, not my friend. Well, the Lord has spoken. And I have a link to heaven now that I didn't have a few months ago. But let me tell you something. You know, I told you about gathering together faithfully. Just love the Lord and obey him. If you want to reach the poor, do that. Loyal's family came from all over the United States to that funeral. And I vowed before God, I said, Lord, Loyal did not once, we cried together that day, but he didn't cry again. He said, I know where I'm going, I'm confident. He said, Rich, promise me that you will give the gospel to my family. Loyal was not, he was my best friend, but he wasn't the most, I mean, he glowed for the Lord, but he wasn't the most victorious Christian I've ever met. Had a lot of things, weaknesses in his life, so to speak. He was a very moral man. But he didn't profoundly accomplish great things for God, but what he did was really, really profitable. And the reason I made this transition now, it's not in my list of methods at this point, but when he would stand in the breaking of bread, he would stutter and he would be emotional and his voice would quake. And he wouldn't say much, but I'll tell you, folks, I don't know whether he brought heaven down to us or took us up to heaven, but this guy was profound. And if you're that way, I mean, if you don't say much, I'd encourage you to bless the assembly with the fruit of your lips. Royal family came together from all over the United States. I told you I wanted to bridge the gap. Here we heard about reaching 3 million. I've got an idea, too. I'll pass it off to you. I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to contact the newspaper in Grand Junction, see if we can get a regular article. We've got some gifted guys there, and I thought, well, we'll just put a regular article in there and see what happens, like the Russian thing. But this isn't 3 million. But I can't walk out of this conference. I can't go home carrying the burden of how am I going to reach the next 3 million. God, if only I could have been in Russia, if only I'd have been if I hadn't been such so stupid when I was in high school, if I hadn't wasted the early years of my life, maybe I could be gifted. Maybe I could have ability in math or something that would give me rapport in somebody's life so I could have some outreach. I can't bridge that gap, and I can't allow it to be my burden because it's God's work in another man's life. But God has given you and I a place where we can serve Him. And I just illustrated that in faithfulness to the church. Christ loved the church and He gave Himself for it. No, we can't do what Christ did, but we can in the sense in which He, an infinite God, did. But we can, a finite. And by the way, our best local assembly is pretty finite when you put it in phase of history, isn't it? But we can carry out God's purposes there. And we can be effective. So to make a long story short, Boyle said to his friend, or to his older brother, who is a believer of about 50 years, 45 years, and has never grown a tad, got saved, and he gave this testimony at the funeral, but he spent 50 years wasted. He said to his brother, I want you to promise me that you will give the gospel to our brothers and sisters. So this poor guy, you know, I've been out there kind of doing it. This poor guy was really burdened, and I was too. Well, we did it at the funeral. The other brother who shared the funeral with me went over and gave the gospel to the family, 15 relatives, on Friday night. And they had a tremendous discourse. We gave the gospel, and I preached like I've never preached before. I preached in the sense of I told them from Loyal's standpoint, and I didn't spare the horses. I wasn't worrying about offending. But the older brother wasn't satisfied. He said, Rich, Boyle made me promise. And I said, he made me promise too. And I thought, I was thinking, I fulfilled that promise in the funeral. Well, this is Saturday afternoon after the funeral. He said, I'm going to get the family together either tonight or tomorrow night. He said, I want you to come over and share the gospel. So I said, okay, great. So he got them together. He gave me a call. I went over and we made a little meager effort. And it became obvious that it wasn't going to happen. He said, go home, give me another hour. We'll eat and so on. In an hour, I went back across the street, and a hush came over the entire family. And I'm not a very impromptu preacher. But God gave me some thoughts that night, and I shared the gospel with them. And all 15 of his brothers and sisters prayed together. We prayed together, and they all professed to receive Christ as their Savior. Now, the hour we had before that, the effort that was made, there was a lot of bickering and opposition. But when God had prepared the way, there wasn't any. Now, what is the gap I'm bridging here? Well, I don't know if you need to come up with a new idea, folks. I don't know if you need to, you know, if a shoebox is going to be the best thing for you. But I think if you will minister in your local assembly and you'll draw nigh unto God and learn what it is to adore Him so that His heart reaches back to you, I think that God will open some doors. We do a lot of things there, back to Memphis. Boy, I got a whole list of stories here I'd like to tell. I just put the name down and the circumstance that happened. Relating to the local assembly, one Sunday morning, we had a couple, I don't know who it was. It was 1981, whatever years ago that was, 16 years ago. Came and visited. We try to get their name, and then we go follow them up. Well, I was following this couple up, and I went to this apartment building with this address in this huge apartment building, and I couldn't get oriented, so I saw a young couple on the doorstep talking, and I could tell as I approached them, it was pretty heavy talk. So I said to them, can you direct me to such and such apartment? The lady said, oh, yeah, I know her. So I went down there, and nobody was home. So I was walking back to my vehicle, and as I walked back, I thought, boy, what a waste, what a shame to have talked to that couple and not given them the gospel. They were still there. So I said, okay, Lord, I'll go talk to them. So I went up to them, and I said, you know, the reason I'm here is these folks came to visit our church, and I was going to talk to them about Christ. And the fellow said, not now. Not now. I'll talk to you later. I said, okay, what's your name? And I jotted the name and phone number down. Kept that in my little notebook for about 2 months, and I'd look at it, and I thought, he's not interested. I'd start to tear it out, and I thought, no. So I tried to call several times. I put a little date down there, tried to call. Nobody's home. So one day I got a hold of it. And I talked, you know, like I'm able to talk. I can just talk and never say a thing. So I did that for about 30 minutes. And finally, I realized I didn't know where I was going and how he was responding on the phone. I said, would you like to meet for lunch? He said, sure. So we met for lunch, and I'll just give you the long and the short of it. That fellow, a few months later, after being involved in Bible study, got saved. His name's Gary Fritzler. He's at Westside Assembly now in Colorado Springs, and he's become the resident theologian for Colorado. This guy has a magnificent mind, and he can devour books. He's a little like, well, he would be Colorado's Jabe, I guess, somebody that can read it and retain it and tell you what they read 3 years later. So just being involved in the local assembly, here's a needy soul. Christmas Eve, we're on methods, by the way. One of the things had the idea that in our subdivision, we count all the houses and we put together a shoebox. It wasn't a shoebox, it was a bag. It didn't occur to me, it's like the shoebox ministry, isn't it? We put together a bag of goodies, and so the ladies got together, I don't know, 15 or 20 of them, or 30, I don't know, and they baked and they cooked and they had a great time, and they put together these bags of goodies. They were heavy because we had to, you know, carry them around while we were caroling, not Christmas Eve, but a week or so before Christmas. And each home, we would give them, I mean, a real hefty bag of cookies with literature, and I wrote up a little presentation on the gospel. Reaching the poor. I thought it was an outstanding idea. One of the families in the subdivision was out the next Sunday morning to the meeting, and I've kind of been in and out since then. Another family in the subdivision we got a nice letter from, and likely there'll be others follow. Tremendous idea. We went from door to door singing the gospel. Have you ever heard those? I mean, have you listened to the words of those Christmas hymns? They're wonderful. Probably in reaching the poor, to bridge that gulf between the 3 million that others might be reaching and where you're at in your little local assembly, how many opportunities do you pass up every day? God, smites my heart. When I speak to someone and I have the opportunity to share the gospel with them and I don't do it. What I'm saying to you folks is we don't need to dream something up. Do it if you will, and hopefully it comes from God. Come up with an idea that really works and do it in your area. But I'd like to communicate to you that we've got, my time's come, we've got opportunity. And God, in His infinite wisdom, has asked us to gather together in a local church and to carry out a fellowship in a way, you know, most of us have so much to do during the week, it's difficult to even make it to the meeting. When we gather together to do the things the Lord's asked us to do, but there's something supernatural about that. That it's going to open doors for you, maybe not for 3 million, who knows? Maybe the next door you reach will be the next Billy Graham. But you'll do it, the setting for doing it is in the local church and doing faithfully what God has given you to do. Excuse me. Okay, good, brother, thank you. I needed that. It's your lunch. Anybody want to make a comment or you have maybe an illustration or something? I apologize. I should have given you that 5 minutes ago. You know, an older brother, 82 now, going to be 83 soon, when he was with us ministering the word, he'd always say at the end of his message, thank you, beloved, for your excellent attention.